Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome into ABQ Connect today. We have a special guest, Congressman Steve Pierce, Chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico. Congressman, welcome into ABQ Connect.
Thank you. Always great visiting with you.
Well, we appreciate you being here. I've been to a number of events as you've been recruiting candidates for state representatives all over the state.
Right.
And I understand that that effort's been going well, but you're also really heavily involved in who's going to be representing New Mexico and Washington. So
we're involved all the way from top to bottom.
Yeah, I want to make sure everybody knows about Steve Pierce. He has been a congressman and a politician, businessman in New Mexico. He represented the 2nd Congressional District from 2003 to 2009, and from 2011 to 2019. That's a lot of service, sir.
14 years.
Thank you.
And it just went by like a day passing. It was very quick. Every day was just an honor, and you get to see things that you never thought growing up in, grew up actually in Nadine, south of Hobbs, that you just don't think, okay, this is ever going to be in my lifetime. And then there you are, and that's, I just always think that's the way God has us of working in our lives, that you can do things and go places. All you got to say is, yes, I'll go.
Sir, you have a breadth of experience in our country and in New Mexico.
I do. I've served in the Air Force. I went to Vietnam in 71, 2, and 3. So, again, saw that theater. That was not by choice, by the way. And again, I just feel like that God put me into something that 30 and 40 years later was going to be very valuable. When 9/11 happened, I was not there, but I went just after that, went in 2003. And so the decision to go to war with Iraq was made before I got there. But everybody, the lobbyists and people come into the office says, your office is working completely different than all the rest. And I said, that's because I know about war. I know what's going on. I know what the terminology is. And so I'm familiar.
Congressman, why did you stay in New Mexico?
I just love it. It's my home. I was coming back from Vietnam once. I hadn't been home quite a while. Of course, I was stationed in Arkansas. And of course, there you can't see a quarter of a mile in Vietnam. You couldn't see even that far, just the forest. And I just didn't know it. I was all closed in, feeling in my heart, but I didn't know all of that. I was driving home. I drove all night long, getting here from Arkansas. I'd come in from Vietnam, then driving straight home. As the sun came up behind me across Amarillo, I could see this limitless horizon. I said, this is who I am and where I am. I've never left just because this is part of me. One of six brothers and sisters, I'm the only one that stayed. And I love New Mexico, and it breaks my heart to see the things that we're doing to the state many times politically, just driving kids out of the state to find their future somewhere else. And I just think that's wrong.
3 years ago, you set some goals as the chairman of the Republican Party in New Mexico.
Yeah, actually, it was just last year.
Yes,
I was still in Congress up until January of last year. And so I became party chair, transitioned out of Congress into the party chair. That's not your normal pathway. Normally, people do not look to be party chairs at any point. It's a very tough job. You're always trying to balance different viewpoints and come to some resolution to where you get everybody on the same team fighting for the same thing. And so a year ago, we set out to win the state for Trump and to turn the state red. That's it. Just the two main goals. That includes, I think, taking the state legislature, both House and Senate, and Trump. So those are our goals.
And those are fairly lofty goals.
They're big goals. We always just feel like that if your goals don't make your insides crinkle up, maybe you're not reaching far enough. And so my whole life has been reaching out further than I thought I could ever get. And most of the time, you'll get there.
This past Wednesday, you made some announcements about how your recruiting efforts and everything are going in the state. We obviously have 112 representatives from the state that will be going up to Santa Fe to represent us. All of them are up for election, and then we have the federal candidates. Tell us how that's all going.
Yeah, we had the most stunning recruiting year ever. We got 101 seats that we're going to contest in. We've got actually about 110 candidates, but some of those are primary candidates. So 101 out of 112, I don't think that Republicans have ever seen that in New Mexico, and we're going to be competitive in them. And people say, well, how are you going to do that? This is a blue state. And I'm saying, well, the other team usually does most of the work for you. You've got a sports background. Mm-hmm. Many times you win the games based on what the other team didn't do instead of what you have to do. And so when the Democrats overreached in the last legislative session a year ago, and then again this year, They did that by passing the red flag bill, taking away gun rights from law-abiding citizens in the state. They way overreached last year in the abortion bill that they were trying to pass. We had 8 Democrat senators vote with us to defeat that bill. That's how far they're overreaching, and now they're attacking those 8 Democrats. Every one of those seats is a pickup opportunity for us if they defeat the conservative Democrat, because conservative Democrats who are voting don't want this progressive agenda they're seeing in Santa Fe. So I'm telling our candidates, you don't have to be a perfect candidate, because the other side is messing up pretty badly, which gives you points on the board. And so just get out, be yourself, let people get to know you. I think we'll be competitive in all those 101 races. But again, it's a record year for us as far as candidate recruitment. That goes on top of getting a candidate in every statewide judicial race, too. So we got 2 Supreme Court justices up for election and 2 appeals court judges. And in a 30-day period, the party worked with the judges to get all of the candidate signatures they needed. And then we qualified all 4 of our judges this past week to get the public financing. That's a couple $100,000 each. It's been a stunning year for the Republican Party.
Wow, that sounds like an amazing amount of work to do. Congressman, I want to go off script just a second.
Sure, yeah.
And I want to play off of something that you just said about all these candidates. How hard is it to run for office? Because the scrutiny and the opposition is always bringing up, I mean, it's nasty. I mean, that's the only word I can think of. How do you endure that?
Well, when you talk about it being nasty, I always have a little saying that I say, that in religion, we'll confess our sins to our pastors. In politics, your neighbor's going to confess your sins for you. so that's what you're talking about. And to be truthful, it's not that tough. People screw up and they know it, and the voters know it. The biggest thing you have to worry about is that, number one, if you dodge and dart away from it. Number two, if you don't ever acknowledge it. I use a candidate, I don't know if you remember, Herman Cain. He was the running for president. Black guy.
I do remember that.
Domino's Pizza or some pizza chain that he started. And it came out that he had, fooled around on his wife 25 years ago. He quit the race there. Herman Cain, that was the year that we nominated Mitt Romney, and Mitt Romney ran the worst presidential race ever. He should have won that race by 15. Instead, he lost by big points. If Herman Cain had gone, if he had told the American people, looked in the camera and said, look, you can see I've got problems at home, and they're legitimate. These things that you're hearing are actually fact. And he said, I'm going to go home, and my wife and I are going to try to solve a marriage. If he had done that, if he had gone home and then come back 30 days later and said, okay, we have reconciled, we have made right between us, it was my fault, I will guarantee you he would have been president. But he instead took off and ran for cover. So I always tell our candidates, nobody's lived a perfect life. Just be straightforward. Tell the truth and tell it often.
Yeah. Well, and that's obviously biblical.
Yes.
You know, when people know, when you're an open book and you're saying, hey, God's working on me, I haven't had a perfect life, God uses your weaknesses.
Confession is good for the soul. That's what it says. And it plays out. Almost all the biblical lessons play out in politics. Nothing is stronger in politics than turning the other cheek. I would tell you that to get along with people who disagree with you violently on policy, if you ever start responding personally, then you never get it done. I tell the story frequently. Maxine Waters was on my committee. She was the ranking Democrat on my committee, and I could never get anything through without her votes, because most things have to be sort of bipartisan. There are some issues that are not, but most on the day-to-day business in the House need to be bipartisan. So I could never get Democrat votes without her. And so she and I were both pretty intense when we'd get into a debate. And about 5 or 6 years before I got out, I walked over finally and said, Maxine, it's pretty tough stuff you and I were just engaged in. It's not personal, is it? You could tell by the set of her jaw that it was. And I said, Maxine, I'm going to stand here till you shake my hand. We cannot make this personal. Finally, she begrudgingly shook my hand. And that played out over the years. One time we were on the floor of the House of Representatives, and she's trying to kill my Indian housing bill. I finally called time out, and I went over and said, Maxine, what in the world are you doing? She says, I'm just trying to kill your bill. She said, you're Republican. I hate Republicans. I'm trying to kill your bill. And I said, well, hate me on the next bill. This is Indian housing, for damn gum's sake. And she said, well, I had never thought about it like that. Okay. She just let it go.
Wow.
Just like that. And that's, and so turning the other cheek, when you hear things that might be offensive and just not reacting in anger, all of these biblical lessons play out in politics. I just tell you.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
So you actually believe that both sides can get along?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I probably was, I don't think I was the most conservative member of Congress, but I was way out that direction. And I never had to compromise my beliefs. I could get along with Democrats there, and I could get along with them here. Frankly, a Republican has to get along with Democrats. You need about 25% of Democrats to vote for you for any Republican to win any seat that's contested. We've got 3 or 4 or 5 84% districts in Lee County, up in San Juan County, or wherever. But for the most part, you're going to need Democrat votes. So, number one, I live it. But number two, my faith background, the way I was raised, you just don't take things at people, and so that kind of ability to get along back and forth is very key. But getting Henry Waxman was, again, somebody that before I went to Congress, I just in my head and heart had a very hard time with him. But actually, he and I got along, and there was a major, major amendment one day that I needed to get through the House. And so, again, I kind of went over. You sit on opposite sides of the chamber, so I went all the way over to his side, back behind, said, Henry, here's what this thing does. And he said, well, that doesn't sound bad to me. So we got up and started debating. And he said, you know, the gentleman's amendment, and his team was telling him, his Democrats were telling him, his staff was telling him, you got to kill this, got to kill it, got to kill it. And he could have. He said, I think the gentleman's amendment's okay. And he let it go again on a voice vote. Voice vote, you don't even have to put a vote up on the board so nobody can say he voted for it. And the environmental community really trashed him over it. But I talked to him later before he got out of Congress, and he said, I still really appreciate your amendment. And so that's the kind of work that you can do if you set out not to make it personal.
Do people still understand interpersonal communication?
Oh, yes. In politics, you just have to have it. You just can't do your business there, texting back and forth, emails. You can do some, but it comes down to you sitting. I'm not even in Congress now, but I got a message from a former staff of mine saying, hey, do you know Tulsi Gabbard? And I said, sure. And he said, what'd you think about her? How was she to work with? She's a Democrat. I could tell he's thinking about going to work in her office because he's got to find a job. And I said, she was always fair. I trusted her. And trust is huge in politics. Again, let your yes be yes, your no be no. That's another one of the things that we're told.
Sure.
And so I said, I trust her 100%. And so he went and talked to her, and he texted back that she really has high opinion of you, too. He said, she offered me the job. I'm going to take it. And I said, just stay true to your values. I said, she's not there for the political reasons that a lot of people are. She's there for the right reasons. He is going to work on armed forces things, which shouldn't be very political. So anyway, yeah, it's still playing out there.
We're going to offer some challenges to our listeners here in the next segment. Stay with us on it.
How does KNKT mean business? KNKT is in the business of sharing the gospel. KNKT is also supported by local businesses who we, in turn, encourage you to support with your patronage. Here's Steve Ryman visiting one such business.
We recently had a chance to catch up with Buck Buckner, the owner of Rain Tunnel Car Spa. Here's what he had to say about doing business locally.
Hey, Budge. Car Spa and other local businesses are joining forces to launch a campaign called Local First. It's a call to action to spend our hard-earned money with locally owned businesses. Why local? For every dollar spent at local businesses, the economic impact on our local economy is 3 to 4 times that of the same dollar spent at a non-local entity. With them, profits beyond minor repairs are exported. Local businesses reinvest in the community again and again. Local businesses are completely dependent on community support and thus have a much deeper tie to the neighborhood. Local businesses are as competitive as non-locals. They hire local, promote local, and operate with far less employee turnover. National tenants are not a critical piece of our local economy and arrive only years after local business success. Where are those nationals? Sports Authority, Marcello's, Borders, Raley's, Copeland's, Zia's. Poof. Gone. Legislators, along with American Express, suggest we take one day to buy local. Nice thought. Don't they know our local businesses operate 365 days per year? So think, act, and do local first. Shop local, dine local, wash local, bank local, construct local, search engine local, follow local media. And finally, to increase the coffers for an even greater Albuquerque, keep it local.
To hear your business featured on KNKT, email advertise@knkt.com.
Now that you found the girl of your dreams, let us help you find the ring of her dreams. Whether you're worried about your budget, what to look for in a diamond, or even which ring to choose that will make her eyes light up, we've got you covered. We've got the best prices in Albuquerque, the largest selection in the state, and we're the only jeweler that allows you to exchange your ring for one full year, even if we custom designed it. You found your girl, and now you found your jeweler. John Thomas Jewelers, 2440 Louisiana Boulevard, on the third floor of the Lewis University Building.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back into ABQ Connect. Congressman, love the description of what actually goes on in your negotiations and interpersonal communication. I've always said that emails and text messages are not communication. Their confirmation.
Yes.
And I'm encouraged that our representatives are actually sitting across from one another. They're human beings. They're talking about things we need. And I'm really encouraged that that's happening. We don't get to see that.
I'll give you another example. I mean, we're just hammering home this value of interpersonal communication. So I had a very good friend who was a staffer, and she was kind of a lead staffer, one of the most knowledgeable people in energy. Well, eventually she left working for me to go to work for the speaker doing his energy work. If you do good work, you percolate up the stream. So when the release of radioactivity happened down in the WIP site, very high profile, she came up and just sat beside me on the floor of the house. I think, and so I'm just sitting here real quiet. And she says one sentence, do we just need to shut the place down? Wow. And I knew if I said yes, that the speaker would probably shut it down. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, it's actually, and I mean, we're not even looking at each other. We're paying attention up here. And it's this quiet conversation. It took about maybe less than a minute. I said, no, I actually need to fix it up. That's the only place we're putting the radioactive waste from around the country. And we've cleaned up Rocky Flats. Everything is down there. I said it was a big mistake, and not the mistake of the facility. It was the sending facility. She said, okay, the speaker's ready to go whichever way you said. Thanks. And that was the last I saw, but we kept it open, and it's open today, and we are cleaning up some of the biggest waste sites in the entire country, and it's all down in those salt beds between Hobbs and Carlsbad. But just one interpersonal communication that had come from years of back and forth with her, with she and I, and I never looked at people as staff or not. I said to my staff, Steve Pierce is really, as an individual, is kind of remote right now. I said, eventually it'll be back to me. But right now, Steve Pierce is 18 of us. That's the number you're allowed to have by law. I said, any one of us screws up, we all suffer. Any one of us succeeds, we all succeed. And so just be careful how you live your life, because we're all judged as one entity, Steve Pierce, the office. And that was always good. I viewed that I had the more public role, but not the more important role. The staffers were very important in Washington. And so again, just what you're saying, that, you get these lessons that one person is not supposed to be above other people. We're all humans. And again, those biblical lessons play out every day, every day.
I attended an event back in November of 2019 where you were speaking, and you were really speaking directly to the evangelical community. Mm-hmm. You made this statement. You said that if we could get 50,000 people of faith to vote in the state of New Mexico, this state would turn red.
We could, evangelicals nationwide would control every single election, if we voted in the same percent as the rest of society.
Tell us about those percentages.
Yeah, so 50% of evangelicals. Now, I'm not talking about all faith groups, just the very narrow group that is very politically engaged. Some religious denominations are not much engaged at all, but evangelicals are. And they're still just registered at 50% of the members are even registered, and then only 50% of them vote. So we perform at 25% of our capability. If we just performed at that 50% level, then we would turn out enough to win every election, and the 50,000 that you're talking about in New Mexico would swing an election here. Every election from top to bottom. School boards are where the greatest need is right now. Our schools are teaching things that they're teaching that socialism is fine, that it's great. And so we have this millennial generation and the younger generation that are really getting on board with Sanders. Well, that's frightening. My lifetime, I've seen Cuba go from a very prosperous country to its socialist state now with no jobs, no prospects, no hope. Same thing has happened in Venezuela and Argentina. It's proved over and over again in history. And we're dabbling in it right now as if it will not affect us in the same way. And that's very scary.
The scariest thing to me is that we don't have any relief of poverty in those countries.
Yeah.
When you talk about socialism, it's supposed to divide up all the wealth. So you would assume that people in poverty would have more. But that's not really the case.
It's not the case. You never average up. You always average down. So you take the top earners and take them down to the bottom because you can never lift people up who don't want to be lifted up. 20 or 25 years ago, Oprah Winfrey was going to really prove to herself that you could cure poverty with help from the outside instead of discipline from the inside. And she never would publish the results, but she quit after about a year. The estimates were that she had put over $150,000 into the pockets of this one family and never saw a change. If you go further back to Lyndon Johnson, his great war on poverty, there's a magnificent photo of Lyndon sitting out in West Virginia on a coal miner's porch, and he got these little ragtag kids growing up and running around the yard, and it looks a lot like my family's background. Just grew up as dad was a roustabout in the oil field. And so here's that picture in Lyndon Johnson in the succeeding years. Trillions have been spent on eradicating poverty, and we have more poverty today than ever. The poverty programs are generally for the people that are in the bureaucracy. So that's what we're really doing. If we would get people back on their feet and get them back out into the workforce, that power of earned success is the most powerful emotion in human history. That I did this, I earned this. That's very, very powerful. It plays out in the minds and the hearts of people who win the lottery. No group of people, and they've measured this constantly, no group of people is more unhappy and dissatisfied than people who get sudden wealth with no activity on their own. And so the way to happiness is to earn your way to happiness. Earn success, very powerful.
It's interesting what you're saying there. I was in San Diego. I have two or three of my children been out there living there. And again, I want to come back to the reason they don't live in New Mexico. Not a lot of opportunities in New Mexico. I'd love to have them back. Right now they're living out in California. But they are finding that California is really a place of challenge. But I went to a barbershop. And I want to reinforce the point that you just made. I'm sitting down with a young man who's owned this barbershop for about 10 years, moved his whole family from Iran to San Diego. And he happens to be a Catholic believer. And we are engaged in conversation. I said, tell me how do you compare yourself to an American? And he literally takes off his little hat and puts it over his, he said, Americans do not understand what they have in America.
That is true.
He says, we have so much opportunity here. So it's so profound how we can, and his whole family's moved out.
Yeah.
And they have this wonderful opportunity. But he says, Americans are spoiled.
Yes, we're spoiled and we're lackadaisical. We're complacent and all those things stand the opportunity to make us suffer greatly.
Let's go back to the challenge I said at our first break. We got to offer a challenge to people that are sitting on the couch. First of all, there is no excuse, ladies and gentlemen, for you not voting in the election. If you're over 18 years old, it is so easy now to just vote online.
Yes.
Number two, there's all kinds of resources that we offer. I want to make sure everybody knows that they can go to newmexico.gop, which is the Republican Party We've pointed you in the direction of the Rio Grande Foundation.
Yes.
We've pointed everybody in the direction of Viante. And these are websites where you can go in and find out what your legislators are voting for. And you can get the local issues and the state issues on the board. Congressman, I need you to explain to us a little bit about how our representatives and everything works in Washington, because I think that a lot of our listeners don't know. How many representatives from New Mexico go to Washington?
We only have three in the U.S. House, and then the other body, the Senate, we've got two. Now, our founding fathers, again, had a magnificent vision of how it should be set up. The House of Representatives is based on population. So that one in the House where I served, then the big states have more power. That's just it. And very, very few things are based on Democrat, Republican. It's almost all big versus small. So the Democrat versus Republican is usually kind of a head fake. It keeps you off of understanding what's really going on. So big versus small is the dominant conversation. But over in the Senate, then all states are equal, two each. And then the Senate has a peculiar rule that says one person can filibuster, and they can filibuster and hold the floor for as long as they want. And so that has evolved into one senator can block everything that they want to, and it takes 60 votes to overcome them. So the minority actually rules in the Senate because of that 60-vote threshold. And so just this last week, there was a Born Alive bill that came up in the U.S. Senate, maybe in the week before, but a Born Alive bill, and they could get 58 or 59 votes to take it to the floor. On the floor, it only takes 51 votes, but it's taking it to the floor that's the hard step, and they couldn't get it onto the floor because they had 41 or 42 Democrats say no, they're not going to debate it. So essentially, babies born alive after an attempted abortion have no political rights, and the doctor can simply put them on. Usually what they do is set them on a shelf and let them expire, just crying quietly over there on the side. And it's a horrible procedure, and yet it lives on because of that filibuster rule in the Senate.
That is just unbelievable. And, of course, you've been close to people of all parties in our state. I mean, the people that I'll call neutrals.
Right.
You're close to them. You're close to the old school Democrats that
old school. I worked for Harold Reynolds when I was.
They're fiscally conservative.
Right.
They're against their right to life advocates. Of course, you mentioned at one of your events that the Catholic Church really stood up a year or so ago when the governor tried
right.
to ram through some additional abortion
right.
stuff. I'm skipping down a little bit here in our list of questions, but I think we need to bring it up because we have a faith audience. We have an audience that I think understands that the sanctity of human life. I understand the Democrat Party has said there is no room for anyone that is pro-life.
That's correct. Yeah.
So I want to, again, challenge our listeners. Pretty tough if you're a person of faith to vote in that party. It seems really strange that they would take that position.
Yeah, people have a stronger alliance to their political party than they do their faith, and that's where one reason that this nation is turning upside down. It's forgetting the foundations of faith are what gave us this magnificent freedom that your friend in San Diego was talking about. We have blessings that we don't even acknowledge or understand anymore, And so this idea of knowing the value of our freedoms would say that we need to adhere to those political or to the religious beliefs that got us there. It's the belief that we get our freedom directly from God that is the underpinning of the Constitution and the Declaration, not from government. And yet when people choose their political party over their faith, they're choosing government over the founding fathers, a reminder that our freedoms come straight from God.
And again, the simple number is 50,000 evangelicals. I mean, if we get the Catholic Christians and other denominations within the Protestant denominations to come forward, I mean, the state could really be changed in that.
It could be changed in this election. And I've seen, I remember when I got to Congress, Arkansas was dead blue. It was 100% blue. I was stationed there in the Air Force, and so I knew it very closely, and I watched it all through my years. And in 1 6-month period, it changed from heavy blue to heavy red, and it hasn't changed back. And that's what I think is going to happen in New Mexico this time. The number of Democrats who are really frightened at where their party is going nationally and here in the state has mushroomed that That number grows daily. Not all are walking away from the party. They say my family was Democrats. I'm going to stay a Democrat, but I'm voting Republican. And that's what I'm saying you have to do. I often get the question, how do you make an elected official listen to us, the constituents? And I said, you know, you never can give enough money because they got people with billions of dollars. You saw Mike Bloomberg. He can pour $10 million into New Mexico, and you can never outgive what they can give on their side. You're not going to write enough letters to get their attention. The only thing they pay attention to is the vote. If they win by 20%, they feel arrogant. They feel like they can do anything. If they win by 2%, they're worried. If they lose, then that send a message to somebody else. Hey, I better look. This is playing out right now. So this week was the Texas primary. On Tuesday of this week, a good friend of mine in Congress, Kay Granger, from Fort Worth, always has been kind of a pro-choice Republican, and we just all understood it. Again, we accepted it, and so I just read an article this morning. She came out 100% pro-life in this debate during this year because she was being pushed by somebody in a primary race that was 100% pro-life, and she said, yes, I voted for many pro-choice things, but you can see in the last 2 or 3 years, she said, my position has evolved pretty significantly. Well, that's what I was saying at the lead of the show. The voters will forgive almost anything if you'll be transparent and honest with them. And she says, yes, I changed my position. And so they reelected her, but by a very narrow margin. And that's what the vote does. It causes people to reassess where they are. When she was winning by 20 and 30 points, she didn't have to worry about where she stood on the issues. So the vote is the only thing that gets people's attention. And by the way, Trump will tell you about the same sequence. There's a fascinating story. He was talking to us Republicans downstairs in the Capitol, and he would come over shortly after his election, and he had all these speeches and stuff in his hand when he walked in. He pitched it off on the table and he said, you know, let's just talk. And he said, number one, he said, I want you to know this, and I want you to know that, and I want you to know this. And then he got around to the social issues and he said, yeah, he said, I didn't grow up in this faith stuff. He said, we didn't ever read the Bible. We didn't know much about it. He said, but Mike Pence is helping me out, and he's also, the White House has a very, very intense Bible study. It's not a lackadaisical thing. I know the personally, the guy that goes there, I studied with him. He would come to the Congress and do Bible studies too. And so he says, I'm starting to learn it, and it all makes sense, but you just have to forgive me for that stuff in the past, because he said, I did most of that stuff they talk about. And so then the second thing he says, pro-life, pro-choice? Hell, I was pro-choice. It's just the way he said it. Sorry about that. He said, yeah, I was. He said, what's better than a woman's right to choose? And he said, it took a young lady coming up at one of my big rallies, and he said, she came up kind of from behind me, and she's tapping me on the shoulder saying, you know what pro-choice means? Or you know what choice means? He says, I don't even know what you're talking about. And you're trying to shake hands with people in front of you, and the pressure's coming from here. And I mean, and you just can't imagine just this. Anyway, and so she says again, do you know what choice means? And he says, I don't even know what you're talking about. And she says, pro-choice, do you know what choice means? And he said, yeah. She said, it means they're choosing to kill their babies. And he said, I snapped around. He said, I don't know who the lady is. He said, I couldn't tell you today. But he said, I never knew that piece. He said, pro-choice, yeah. Woman's right to choose, yeah. I didn't know what they were choosing. He said, at that moment, I became pro-life. He's the most pro-life president ever. Mm-hmm. Ever spoke at the Life March this year. Mm-hmm. No president's ever spoken at it. Sent Mike Pence 2 years ago. And so that's what God can do in our lives.
Amen. Congressman Steve Pierce, he is the chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico. We've got election year going on, primaries here at the beginning of June, and then the big national election and local elections here in November. So stay with us on ABQ Connect.
El Ranchito de los Niños transforms the lives of children who have been abused and abandoned by keeping brothers and sisters together in a loving family farmhouse and giving them tools they need for success in life. At El Ranchito, children learn self-worth by learning how much God loves them. They're also given the best education possible to help them create a new future. You can be a part of changing the lives of children at El Ranchito de los Niños by attending this year's fundraising dinner, Charity Cruise 19, Saturday night, March 21st at 5. 5 p.m. in the Isleta Resort Casino Convention Facilities. An evening of fun, amazing food, incredible auction opportunities, and information about El Ranchito de los Niños. Auction items and sponsors are still needed. Tickets or whole tables are available. More information at 505-565-4470. That's 505-565-4470. This message is part of Mission New Mexico. Sponsored by Mark Pardo Salon Spa, New Mexico Solar Group, KNKT, and Star 88.
Life can take an unexpected turn in your home or business by fire or flood. As a result, you may have mold problems. Let the experts put your mind at ease with a quick response from locally owned water extraction experts. They'll provide service within the hour, are available 24/7 for emergencies, and work with all insurance companies. Professional, certified, and friendly technicians are here to do the job right the first time. Call the experts now at 505-250-6500 or visit them online at waterextraction.com.
Since the Bible is the Word of God, since it does reveal the character of God, since it alone describes salvation and eternal life, since all these things are true of God's Word, how important is it to know what every word of Scripture means? Hi, friends. John MacArthur here. There's only one way to tap into the power of Scripture, and that's by immersing yourself in it regularly. Every day on Grace to You, we unpack the Bible verse by verse, precept upon precept, and there's no better way to spend 30 minutes of your day. So join us here on this station for Grace to You.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on KNKT. On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Thank you for staying with us this afternoon on ABQ Connect. Hope everybody's had a great week. Chairman of the New Mexico Republican Party, Congressman Steve Pierce, in studio with us this afternoon. Congressman, boy, the stories you've already shared are amazing, but I have to voice a little bit of frustration because I'm not frustrated. I'm frustrated with people. We're talking about how easy it is to vote. We're talking about you can start voting when you're 18 years old. The millennials and the X-Gens and all of the, I can't keep track of all these nicknames they have for them, but they just need to stand up and listen to the issues and learn what's going on and cast a vote. And that seems like a pretty simple thing to do.
It is.
But it's not always that simple.
It's not. And I'll tell you that our founding fathers, again, wanted not a democracy, but a republic. That is, we elect people to go pay attention to the issues. And that was a stroke of genius on their part because democracy, I mean, I don't think that you probably personally want to be involved in the discount rate that the Federal Reserve is establishing for loans.
Right.
I don't think you do. Right. I don't think I did, but I was elected to do it, and I was on that committee, so I had to become familiar with it. But that's what we do. We take the issues and become knowledgeable to save our people from having to do it. But now then people are complacent. They just take it all for granted. They say it's all the same. It's going to work out. They don't pay attention. And they don't pay attention to a kind of a serious level. So I was elected first to the State House of Representatives from my little district there, just a section of Hobbs. Then later ran for the U.S. House of Representatives and served in Washington for 14 years. Throughout the 14 years, people very, very knowledgeable about the system would come up and say, hey, you still going to Santa Fe and you still working for us up there? Mm-hmm. They never could make the transition. And that's good to a point, but it's bad to a point. And your concern hits when it gets bad. The goodness is that we trust people to run the business of government for us, which is what a republic is. Mm-hmm. The badness is that they've become disengaged, so they don't even know the difference between socialism and the free market. And so I just tell people that you gotta be teaching your kids. They're not teaching them at school. And even that, we've outsourced so many things from the home. And I think that's one of the great failures in society today in America is that we're outsourcing parental responsibility to the schools, to the church, to the law enforcement officers. And parents then just want to be the good person in their kids' lives and want to be their friend. They don't want to be that disciplinarian, the one that tells them where the curbs are. You've got to keep them in the lanes. And so I think that parental breakdown is a big problem of education. It's a big problem in in the law enforcement of the day, drug use rampant among wealthy families. So at some point, we're going to have to really take a deep look in the mirror.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the candidates for Congress and Senate?
On the Republican side, we had a vast array going into convention coming out that was somewhat fewer. But we've got Native American male and female candidates. That's unheard of in New Mexico for our Native American friends to be as registered as Republican and then to run publicly. They might be registered, but it's always been kind of a quiet thing. So we have Hispanic male and female candidates. We've got just a good array, strong, diverse field of candidates, and they're very good candidates. I've watched for 20 years, and we've always had trouble recruiting into the Republican primary. This year, it was just a surge of people saying, I want to run. In that northern district that we've only had once in the last 50 or 60 years, that maybe ever in that northern district, we've had 2 years of Republican there. We had six candidates stand up and say, I'm going to run for that, and each one of them were very good. So two of those will actually make it through this primary process. Maybe a third's going to get on the ballot. But any one of those three, I think, could be great representatives in Congress, and I think we'll have the opportunity to win that that northern district for the second time in a long time.
That's exciting. And at the Senate?
Same thing. We had five or six candidates stand up there. Each one of them very good. We pared that down to two. I think a third is going to get signatures. But again, any one of the three, I think, are going to give Ben Ray Lujan a run for his money. Ben Ray has decided to get into leadership, and that's fine, except it makes you vulnerable at home because you have to spend your time around the rest of the country. In leadership, you're leadership for the whole party, not just for your state. And so Ben Ray has been absent from his district a lot. I saw that when I was campaigning for governor up in the north, and people said, well, you're still in Congress. Would you help us do this? I said, well, I'm not your representative. Well, he never is here, and he never does anything. That's a weakness for anyone. Doesn't matter what the party it is. So I think that we're going to have a great shot there. President Trump is going to lead our team. There's going to be a tremendous turnout on the Republican side.
I want to get back to our listeners. A large portion of them are Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
A large portion of them are Democrat believers in Jesus.
Sure.
And I almost feel like they need permission to vote Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that such a thought process?
It's ingrained in us. And Bill Clinton ran into the same problem. His affairs with Monica Lewinsky were pretty well known, and so Dick Morris, I consider him a friend. He was the top advisor to Clinton during that period.
Mm-hmm.
And he said their campaign for reelection was because they were polling and people hated Clinton's moral stance. But what they did is say it's okay to dislike him and still vote for him because of his policies. And he won the election doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now, Democrats need permission to dislike Trump's tweets, his brusque style, and still vote for him. And so that's one thing that that I think the president really needs to be doing is saying, look, it's okay for you to dislike the way I communicate, but we're doing dramatic things for the country and still vote for him. It's one reason I think he's going to win in New Mexico, because I feel that surge of support coming from the Democrat side. And again, for any Republican to win statewide in New Mexico, you got to have a lot of Democrat voters to vote for you. He's been steady on the conservative issues, support for the Second Amendment, support for the First Amendment, freedom of religion, done more for freedom of religion than any president. And I will tell you, our religious freedoms are under attack right now. And so this president has done things to justify support by the faith community. And you know what I like about the president? He was given his nominee. He was given his acceptance speech in Cleveland. I didn't ever think he would get through the primary. He wasn't my first choice. And so he shows up, and when I really decided that I liked him, there are two things at convention. Number one, at a convention, you got 6, 8, 10,000 people, and they're all milling around talking to each other while the speech is going on. And so TV can shut out that noise, and it looks like it's all on the floor. It is chaos. And his family was sitting there listening to every speech every day. And they had a little roped off area. Somebody would come up and holler, could I get a picture? They'd walk over to the rope, take the picture, and walk back and sit down. So that respect for the process was something that you could also tell they love and respect their father. And you can fake anything in politics, but you can't fake your kids. So the second thing he said in his speech, and you could tell he's awkward working off the teleprompters, and he's working his way back and forth. And then he gets there and he says, "And I'm getting support from evangelicals." That was off the teleprompter. Then he came off the teleprompter and looked at us, at the audience, and he said just one simple phrase, "I'm not sure I deserve it." That was, in essence, a confession in front of 30 million people watching on TV and all of us at convention that he had lived a life that maybe didn't comply with the lives that we try to live in the faith community, and an acknowledgement. And that takes tremendous political courage to say, "I don't think I deserved it." And so those two things really caught my attention and said, okay, this is the kind of guy we want, somebody who'll be honest and straightforward no matter the cost. And so here we are.
Well, and it's absolutely true that if you're just candid, again, God works despite us.
I know. Despite us, and we see a lot of biblical instances, especially in the Old Testament, where God used really some pretty rogue people to do things that were dramatic for Israel. And so I always say that God uses ordinary people in extraordinary ways.
Amen. Congressman Steve Pierce in studio with us this afternoon on ABQ Connect. We're going to be right back. We've got one more segment to go, but we're going to talk about the needs of people in New Mexico, because I think they're different down in the southeast corner of the state than they are up in the northwest and vice versa. So we'll be right back.
If you're currently paying a monthly electric bill, you already have the means to switch to solar. Local and employee-owned and operated, New Mexico Solar Group, an authorized SunPower dealer, provides a free consultation explaining the advantages of solar power. Financing available, no down payment required. It's easy to harvest power from the sun and stop overpaying for electricity. Call New Mexico Solar Group at 505-357-1198. Online at nmsolargroup.com. That's nmsolargroup.com.
To a patient with High Desert Hospice, something as simple as a caring touch, a smile, a prayer, or even just physical presence can bring comfort beyond measure.
I was unsure about volunteering, but when I met my first patient, I knew I had made the right decision. The patients and families are so grateful. You can't help but feel good.
Discover just how easy and fulfilling volunteering with High Desert Hospice can be. Go to highdeserthospice.care. That's highdeserthospice.care. And click on volunteer.
When that check engine light comes on, do you instantly fear the worst? After all, we know how uncomfortable it can be to take your car to the shop wondering if your technician genuinely cares about you and your car. At Christian Brothers Automotive at Albuquerque and Rio Rancho, you'll never have to think twice about it. Their highly trained technicians approach their work with honesty and integrity. In Albuquerque at 8031 Ventura Street Northeast, and in Rio Rancho at 2014 Southern Boulevard Southeast. Online at CBAC.com.
Gonset Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury. Don't ignore the pain and discomfort any longer. Schedule a consultation today at gonsted-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back into ABQ Connect, and Congressman Pierce, what a neat interview. I'm learning so much, but we have a list of about 9 or 10 questions, and I've already added in my head about 40 more, so I'm hoping to come back on
the
program. It's an amazing thing to talk about this, and you've traveled the whole state. I mean, you initially represented the southeast corner of the state.
Right.
A lot of oil and gas production. Yes. That's going to lead us to our last question of the day, which has to do with this budget thing that the governor's been talking about, but I want to shift to this. How are the needs of people in Farmington different from the needs in Hobbs, and the people in Raton different from the needs in Las Cruces?
Yeah, the needs are actually very similar. It is the demographical concerns that are very different. So in Hobbs, you got a lot of blue collar people working in the oil field, and they just want to know that they can feed a family. Well, that's the same thing that someone in Raton wants. They want to know that they can get a job and feed a family. Same thing in Albuquerque. So that basic need is just for an economic system that is working and works for both all generations. The biggest problem that we have right now is we're exporting our young people at an alarming clip. We spend about $100,000 to $150,000 of taxpayer money to educate our children all the way up through college. And then we give away that education free to another state because they simply immigrate over there to get a job. It's tremendous investments that we are losing because we're not offering hope and opportunity. And that, again, are the basic needs. Everybody needs the hope that they can succeed here and the belief that it's actually going to occur soon enough to cause things to be effective. But now when you're talking about the demographic differences, again, Farmington and Hobbs, very similar. They both are extraction of mineral resources, oil and gas, mining, whatever. We don't have much mining in Lee County, but the potash mines are right across in Eddy County. But then as you move across into the area around the White Sands, and you've got the base there, and you've got the base over in Clovis, now your communities are more interested in the military and how much safe the bases are. So I was constantly fighting fights against other states to keep them from taking our military presence. If you get then into the Rio Grande Valley, you've got agriculture concerns, but then you also have a lot of retirees. They like Las Cruces. They come in there, and so they bring different viewpoints with them, generally from other states, and they want just a place where they know the retirement's going to be safe. They don't want it to get too crowded, and so you get that pushback against too much development in those areas. Then when you swing further over into the Silver City area, back into the mining, back into the ranching, which is somewhat different than irrigated agriculture farming. If you swing up into Albuquerque, it just is kind of a bustle, and there needs to be a large medical presence here. Of course, you got your national labs up in this end of the state. They always want the political connections to keep the labs safe and keep them here. And then northern New Mexico just wants hope. They're the largest drug addiction and largest opioid deaths in the entire country per capita occur there. And Rio Riva County, just that's what I hear every time I go there. You got to stop the drugs. You got to stop them. And, of course, you're talking both illegal drugs and then prescription drugs. And it's a very complex problem, but I think it all originates from a lack of hope up in that area, and just the pointlessness, and they don't see a way that they can stay there and be with their families. Then they leave, and families fracture, and then you get weaker family structures. You get less discipline in people's lives. Family structure is just very important. So, as a gubernatorial candidate, as someone in Congress, I always work to see if we could create jobs in every area because people want to, they want to work where they grew up. I'm still where I grew up on purpose.
Boy, and I wish my five children would work and live where they grow up. You know, I'm going to be one of those grandpas that has to travel all around the country.
And you get this fracture in the family, you get problems out there, you're not close enough to deal with them, and suddenly there's just this little bit of an edge that we're not that unit that we used to be. And that hurts us as a nation, hurts us as a family.
Let me share with you, as a New Mexican private citizen, something that I did here 6 months ago. All the discussion about the wall on our southern border. And I decided, you know what? I haven't seen any news station really do what I would call a unbiased, comprehensive news report on what the people in southern New Mexico want. So I drove down to Las Cruces, and then I made my way south to the border of Arizona. I didn't find one person that was against the wall. Now, I'm a retired banker, so I was trying to figure out what are the motivations. Well, a couple of the ranchers down there shared with me, look, number one, once the wall goes up, we are going to feel a lot safer. We really are. We're going to feel a lot safer. But number two, we think that our land and the value of our business will increase as a result. So they have both a business motivation and just a safety motivation. How do you think, why is that message not going out all throughout New Mexico? Why are people against that? Because it seems like our state wants it.
Yeah, I think our state does want it. Again, that was one of the great conflicts I had with the Bush administration. They were kind of toying with this whole open border and the amnesty, and they weren't actually getting there, but I was totally resistant because I got to deal with those families you were talking to. They would say, look, that's my fence. I put it up this week, and now they stole it and moved it over and put it on their deal. And I can't go get it, and my cows are walking across, so those are my 12 cows, and I can't go get them. The U.S. government won't do it. So essentially, we had all the way from Highway 5, which is sometimes 5 miles from the border, sometimes as far as 70 miles from the border. That's where the Border Patrol would patrol. And so I'm saying you're leaving these people as if they're not American citizens. And so we fought Bush, the Bush administration totally, and finally got it to where they actually patrolled on four-wheelers on the border. Mm. And so that was a huge success. But people want to be secure. I will tell you, the hardest place to knock doors as a politician is in Las Cruces. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got these heavy doors, these big iron doors. They got big barking dogs inside, and it just takes forever to get up through their system. And that's because they feel unsafe. So New Mexico really does want the wall. It is the elected officials who say they don't want the wall. And of course, you're always going to have some political activists on it. But the general everyday Hispanic and non-Hispanic says, yes, we want to secure the border.
Again, off script a little bit, but I know you have a lot of friends that have immigrated to this country, mm-hmm. and they've done so legally. They've been very successful. Can we get a plan where it's not like standing in line at the motor vehicle department mm-hmm. for hours and days and
years
to get into this
country?
With
congressional help, sometimes takes 15 or 20 years to come here legally.
Wow.
And so, again, I had a plan that I pushed with the Bush administration, with the Obama administration. And Trump actually had it pretty well the same way that I had designed it, to where we would cure most of the border problems and allow and fix legal immigration, which is what you're talking about. We got to the floor of the House. It was a little bit too liberal. I'm very conservative, and I was supporting it. But some of the conservative Republicans wouldn't, because it gave permission for the DACA people to stay here, and they just oppose it. All Nancy Pelosi had to do for us to revitalize that whole system was give us 5, maybe 10 votes from her side, and she refused to let any of her Democrats vote for it. That was one of the great failures of my 14 years in Congress, because that immigration issue is so, so divisive. And I just think that Nancy Pelosi didn't want to cure it because she wanted the issue, not the solution. And that was a shame, because President Trump had gone further than Obama by far to cure the problems that we face. And you would imagine that if he scooted that far towards the Democrats, that he would lose some of the conservative Republicans. We just needed 5 or 6, 10 votes, and that was a shame. But yeah, people want to cure that problem, but it takes a long time with congressional help sometimes for people to come here legally.
What I like about what you're saying, though, Congressman, is that you had a plan.
Yes.
And so many times I see things getting passed, particularly in the state legislature, where there's a bill proposed, but there's actually no plan. They don't know where they're going to spend the money. They don't know what they're going to do. And I just feel that we need to have the whole presentation. You just talked about something that you referred to as a failure, but I view that as that'll come back on the table if you turn the state red.
Right.
And America.
True. Yeah, and America, yeah. So I think that this coming election is very key from that. The president actually is not extremely partisan. He actually will drift pretty far back and forth to work out solutions. He's a pragmatist. He just wants to solve problems, and many he's solving with executive order, but for it to become permanent, needs to be passed into law. And these are things that the Native Americans, there is a bill that really deals with missing and murdered women, and it's mostly Native American women. He just implemented it by executive order, because we could never get that through the House or the Senate. Again, it was an issue that I worked on. And so Native Americans are saying, wait, this president that we don't like very much has done more for us than any other one. And so President Trump is really doing a wide array of things that I think are going to settle our long-term future and to prosperity. But he's getting such resistance because the Democrats who are in leadership, not the ones out here, but the ones in leadership in Washington, hate the fact that he is getting so many of their voters. The black population is swinging by 20 or 30 points. If he hits 28 points in the black population, which is where he's polling right now, then the Democrat Party has great problems in the foreseeable future. Same thing with our Hispanic friends, that he has gone from a very low rating and increased by about 20 points there, because people are looking at the job he's doing. They're not listening to the media about what they want them to believe. So again, this is a very key election coming up, because we're either going to drift way towards socialism, or we're going to reinforce the free market for the next 50 years.
more you talk about all the things going on, the more I realize I don't really know what's going on. So thank you so much.
Hey, I've enjoyed it. We'll do it again.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks for joining.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.